So this whole series, that's what it's about. We're trying to figure out what it would look like for us to become a people after God's heart. And so we're looking at all these different stories in the life of David, and we're just going to continue today by focusing on one of the most important aspects of David's life. And that aspect is this friendship that he had with a guy named Jonathan. Today I want to just preach a message called I Got Your Back. I want to talk about friendship, okay? Because the Bible talks about friendship a lot, right? It has a lot to say. It thinks that friends are really, really important because we live in a world that isn't how it should be. Right? We live in a world that is broken, in a world where the people we love get sick. We live in a world where maybe family members are struggling with mental illness, anxiety, depression, schizophrenia, right? We live in a world where people hurt one another, where they're not kind, where they take advantage of one another. And the whole thing that we have in common with the people in this room is at some point or another, we will all experience the brokenness of this world. And the Bible is going to say that it's going to be really hard for us to make it through some of those storms in life unless we have one or two really good friends. Proverbs 18:24 says it like this: "A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." It's saying, you know, we can all have a lot of companions, right? We can have a lot of acquaintances, a lot of people who kind of know us on a surfacey level, but when times get hard, when we experience the brokenness of this world, they're going to bail, right? But there's going to be a friend, singular, right? You don't get a ton of friends in this life, but the Bible says there's going to be a friend that'll stick with you through that time, through those disasters that tend to hit our lives because of the broken world that we live in, and they're going to say, hey, I'm going to make sure that you don't come to ruin. I'm going to be there for you. But in a busy culture like the one we live in, right, where we're working long hours and we're traveling all the time, it seems that friendship is the one relationship that tends to get squeezed out of our lives. Right? It seems that friendship is the one relationship that always gets a backseat to the rest of the relationships in our lives. So what are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to find these friends that the Bible is talking about, and why are they so important for getting us through the brokenness of this world? And so that's what we're going to be looking at today. That's what David and Jonathan, that's what their friendship, that's what their story is going to help us see. And so if you want to follow along where I'll be, I got the outline there in the sermon. I've just got 2 points, I've got 2 points for us, and we're just going to see very quickly from David's and Jonathan's friendships. We're going to see the foundation for friendship. And then we're going to see why friendships are so important, especially when life gets really hard. So we're going to see, again, the foundation for friendship, and then we're going to look at why friendships are so important. So let's jump into this, the foundation for friendship. Guys, we're going to be, again, 1 Samuel chapter 14, starting in verse 6. And we're going to start this by looking at Jonathan individually, and then looking at David individually, and then their friendship together. So as you guys are turning there, just a little bit of context for what's going on in this passage. So right now, the Israelites are at war with this people group called the Philistines, okay? And things aren't going well, okay? The Israelites have lost a ton of their territory. They've been pushed back. They're actually in hiding right now. And Jonathan, who's the crown prince of Israel, is hiding. He's at the bottom of a hill inside of a cave, and there are some Philistines at the top of the hill, okay? And he hates the fact that he's hiding right now. He hates the fact that these Philistines have pushed in and have taken over their territory. So he says this to his armor bearer in verse 6. He says, "Come, let's go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us. For nothing can hinder the Lord from saving, by many or by few." So if we just pause right there, really quick, the Bible's trying to show us what type of man Jonathan is. It's trying to say, hey, he knows God. He knows that God can save by 1,000 people or just by him and his armor bearer. So we see kind of just from this little passage here that Jonathan is a man of faith, he's a man of courage, and he's a man of action. So hold on to that for a second. So his armor bearer, verse 7, says to him, "Do all that is in your heart. Do as you wish. Behold, I am with you, heart and soul. Let's ride." That's Alex's translation. Okay, then Jonathan says, "Behold, let's cross over to the men, and we will show ourselves to them there. If they say to us, 'Wait until we come up to you,' then we will stand in our place, and we will not go up to them. But if they say, 'Come up to them,' then we will go up to them. For the Lord has given them into our hands, and this shall be a sign to us." So both of them answered, So both of them showed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines, and the Philistines said, "Look, the Hebrews are coming out of their holes where they've hidden themselves." And the men of the garrison yelled at Jonathan and his armor bearer. They said, come up to us and we will show you a thing. Now, I know last week that JD said that David was like the worst trash talker in the history of the world, but like, this is even worse, man. Like, who says this? Come up here, I'm gonna show you a thing. Sounds like to me like a homeschool kid getting ready for a fight, you know? It is just not okay. Now, if you guys homeschool your kids, that's totally fine. I like that, that's great. But just know they're not going to be good at roasting people. Like, that is a reality. They're not going to be able to do that well. Anyways, let's keep moving. So Jonathan said to his armor bearer after they gave this great trash talk, he said, come up after me. Let's go. For the Lord has given them into our hands. And then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and on his feet and his armor bearer after him. And they fell before Jonathan and his armor bearer. And they killed them. That first strike, which Jonathan and his armor bearer made, killed about 20 men within, as it were, a half a furrow's length and an acre of land. And there was great panic in the camp and in the field and among all the people. And the garrison and even the raiders trembled, and the earth quaked, and it became a very great panic. So if you guys look at that last little part, like it says the earth quaked, right? This is God fighting for his people. This right here is God fighting against the Philistines. That's why it's recorded here in the Bible. It's to show that, man, Jonathan isn't alone. He isn't alone in this battle. Him and his armor bearer are together. And because of their faith, because of their trust in who God is, God said, I'm going to fight in this battle for you. I'm going to be there with you. So Jonathan knows God. He trusted God. And because of that, it propelled him into action. And Israel got this huge victory from the Lord that day. Jonathan and his armor bearer climb up this mountain, and they defeat this whole squadron of Philistine soldiers. And Israel is psyched. It's amazing. Right? And God gets this incredible amount of glory. See, Jonathan's a man who knows God, who trusts God, and is propelled into action. Right? And just two chapters later, we get introduced to a guy who does something very similar to what Jonathan does. We get introduced to a man that the Bible describes as a man of faith, a man of courage, and a man of action. We get introduced to David. Right? If you were to turn over to 1 Samuel 17, this is the passage that JD preached last week. It's this story of David and Goliath. And David does this thing that's very, very similar to what Jonathan has just done. He has to go and check on his brothers because his dad said, hey, you need to go make sure your brothers are okay. So he goes there. And when he's there, he sees Goliath taunting Israel. He sees Goliath calling out curses on his God. And David watches this and he just says, hey, is anyone going to check this fool? Is someone going to do something about this guy who's making fun of our God, who's making light of who we worship? And he's like, no, this isn't okay. I'm going to do something about this. And so David, because of his love for God, because of his zeal to make God known and bring him glory, he does something. And so the Bible is very explicit about why David actually goes and steps up to Goliath, right? He's like, man, my God ain't no punk. I'm going to show you. So this is 1 Samuel 17:46. He says, to Goliath, in this day, the Lord will deliver you into my hands. I will strike you down, and I will cut off your head, and I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, so that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Right? His whole motivation for actually going up and facing Goliath is so that the whole world will know that there's a God in Israel. Like, this is the God that we need to worship. This is the God that you need to give all of your glory and honor and praise to. And what's incredible about this story is, just like Jonathan, David should have no chance of defeating Goliath. But he does. God empowers him to do it, and Israel gets this incredible victory, and God gets all of this glory. We see that David is a man of faith, he's a man of courage, and he is a man of action. Now, I say all that to say this. We get to see the first time these two guys meet. We get to see the first time that David meets Jonathan. And if you would, turn over to 1 Samuel chapter 18. This is a big deal. Okay, so this is right after the whole David and Goliath thing happens. And David is talking with Saul. Again, right after the whole David and Goliath thing happens. And it says, as soon as he, that's David, finished speaking to Saul, it says the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. I'm going to read that one more time, okay? As soon as David had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, And Jonathan loved him as his own soul. So again, in this context, this is happening right after this battle between David and Goliath. He's talking to Saul, you know, and I would just ask the question, man, what are they talking about? You know, and this has to be David like recounting this story of why he did what he did and how he wanted to go out and face Goliath so that people would know that there's a God in Israel. And it says, when Jonathan, like when David finished speaking, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, because he's like, man, I found my guy. I found a dude that I can be friends with. That is someone who loves God like I do, who trusts him like I do, and is propelled into action like I am. And so, again, I kind of show you all of these things in both of their lives to show you this, that the foundation for friendship, that the foundation for true, deep, lasting friendship is a shared passion. The foundation for friendship is a shared passion. Jonathan has just discovered someone who's passionate about the same thing he is, that who loves God, who trusts God in the way that he does, right? Jonathan sees David's faith and his boldness, and he says, that's my dude. That's someone I want to be friends with. That's someone I can be friends with, right? We learn that the foundation for friendship is a shared passion, right? The foundation for friendship is not us going up to kind of random people and saying, hey, like, do you want to be my friend? Do you want to be my friend? Like, we can be besties. It'd be awesome. I don't recommend that you do that. That just makes an awkward situation, right? Don't just go up to someone and say, hey, you want to be my friend? Right? That's not going to work out well. But what makes a good friend, the foundation, the building blocks for a good friendship is not, do you want to be my friend? But it's, oh, man, you love that too? You're passionate about that too? You love that too? C.S. Lewis says it like this. The typical expression in an opening friendship would be like, what? You too? I thought I was the only one. And then he goes on to say this. He says, this is why those truly pathetic people who simply want friends can never make any. The very condition for having friends is that you would want something more than having friends. Right? If someone asks, do you see the same truth? Right? Are you passionate about the same thing? And your honest answer is, I really don't care about that. I just want you to be my friend. Then no friendship can arise. There would be nothing for the friendship to be about. Those who have nothing can share nothing. Those who are going nowhere can have no fellow travelers. See, C.S. Lewis is saying that the foundation for friendship is a shared passion. It's a shared truth that gets built on in time. And that's exactly as what we see with David and Jonathan. Their friendship is built on this zeal that they have for God. And now, obviously, not all friendships need to be built on Jesus, right? Like, I've got friends, and I'm sure you do too, that aren't Christians, that wouldn't consider themselves Christians. And there might be a lot of you in here right now that aren't Christians, and you're saying, dude, I don't know, I'm not a Christian, and I've got plenty of friends, and they're great. And I'm not saying that you need to be a Christian in order to have deep friendship, but what I am saying is that when you base your friendship on Christ, when he becomes kind of the centerpiece that everything else is built around, small talk happens a lot. I don't know about you, but I hate small talk, right? Kind of those basic questions. How are you doing? I'm fine. How are you doing? I'm fine. Right? Like, it annoys me. But when I'm with someone who I know shares the same passion that I have for Christ, it's so much easier for me to open up about my hopes. It's so much easier to open up about my dreams, my current struggles, because, you know, I've got sin in my life, and I know you do too, right? Like, you don't need to project this aura of strength, because you know that you're a sinner just like I am, right? Jesus had to die on a cross for both of us, so we don't need to fake it when we're together. We can talk about what we're struggling with, how I'm failing to love my wife in the ways that I know I should, how I desire some things that are going to train wreck my life, and we can encourage one another to follow Jesus together, right? We can talk about what is really important in life. Why are we here? The meaning, and we can have some of these shared definitions of what it looks like to actually live a good life. Like, these friendships that you get to have with people who follow Jesus like you do just end up going so much deeper and faster. And I think what this story is saying is, man, if we want this kind of soul-to-soul connection with a person, if we want this friendship that kind of transcends the superficial, I mean, the Bible's saying that it needs to be built around kind of this passion for God. And I want to ask you this question. I'm going to get a little bit personal. Okay, I just want to ask, do you have that in your life? Do you have a friend that gets you at like a soul level? And I know some of you in here probably do. You would say, yeah, man, I've got some great friends, and you know, we know each other for a long time, and that's great. But I know for a lot of us in here, friendship has been a real struggle. It's difficult. It's it's hard to find friends. And I, can I just encourage you this way? Would you plug into a city group around here? Now, I know a lot of you have maybe tried small groups before, and you're like, dude, I don't want to go there. Like, there wasn't any real community there, and it was just awkward, and we hated going the entire time that we went. But can I just tell you that city groups are sort of like the front door into friendship. They're the front door into community. They're just designed to kind of introduce you to some people who might be passionate about the same thing you are, right? And it's going to take some real effort to kind of actually cultivate that friendship outside of city group, right? And so just my own personal story, when I started at City Light a little bit over 5 years ago, for the first year that I was at City Light, I never attended a city group. I would not go there. I don't know if I can say that now as the city group's pastor or if I'm going to get fired, but for the first year, I'm like, I'm not going to that. Those things suck. I'm not trying to be a part of them. But it took a year. It took a year for me to actually step in the door of a city group. And when I went to that first one, I'm like, dude, all these people are, they're going to be fake, man. This isn't going to be something I want to be a part of. And it took a while, but a guy who's actually up here playing guitar, Zach Davey, and another one of my friends, Colin Abbey, he actually invited me and another guy to actually go camping in South Dakota. And it was outside of Citigroup that some things started to happen. I started to see that these guys were actually pretty serious about following Jesus. They're pretty passionate about trying to figure out what it would look like to be a young adult, to be socially normal, which is a big value of mine, to be socially normal and actually follow Jesus and read the Bible and figure out how do you stand for truth in a way that doesn't drive everyone away from you. And I started to see their passion for God, and I just thought, these can be guys that I'm friends with. These can be my dudes, you know? And I just want to tell you that all that stuff, those friendships, that deepness didn't happen inside Citigroup, but it started there. It became a front door for friendships to actually take root and for some soul-to-soul brotherhood to kind of take place. And so it took some time. It took some time for that stuff to get real. And so if you're struggling with a friendship right now, could I just encourage you, could I push you to try some of our city groups? And maybe some of you guys in here, you do have some good friends, but for whatever reason, that friendship is just kind of faded off a little bit. Nothing really bad has happened. There hasn't been any like sin or conflict. Like, you've just kind of drifted apart because of busyness. Can I encourage you to reach out to that friend, to not let that thing die, because friendships are so important, especially when storms hit us in life. And when we're about to see one such storm fall on David, and it's his friendship with Jonathan that allows him to actually get through this. And so point number one, we looked at the foundation for friendship and that it's a shared passion. But now I want us to see point number two. We're going to see why friendships are so important. So if you would continue to read this story, like, what happens after David and Goliath is David gets invited into Saul's house. He becomes like a general in Saul's army and becomes essentially like a son to Saul, right? He's winning all of these battles. David is just amazing. He can't lose. But the thing that starts happening is David starts to get more famous than Saul. People start to really like David more than they like Saul, and Saul starts to slip into paranoia. He starts to think, David is going to, he's going to steal this kingdom from me. He's going to stab me in the back, and he's going to take this thing from me. So in chapters 18 and 19, Saul tries to kill David four different times. He tries to take him out. He devises all these different plans, tries to kill him, and David is freaked out. And so he goes to his best friend, Jonathan, in chapter 20, which is where we're going to be. So if you'd look at 1 Samuel chapter 20, starting in verse 1, David goes to his friend after all these attempts on his life. He says, "What have I done? What is my guilt? What is my sin before your father that he seeks my life?" And Jonathan said to him, "Far from it. You shall not die. My father does nothing either great or small without disclosing it to me. And why should my father hide this from me? It's not so." Jonathan's like, "What are you talking about? My dad's not trying to kill you. You're crazy, right?" But David vowed again, saying, "Your father knows well that I have found favor in your eyes." And he thinks, "Don't let Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved. But truly, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, there is but a step between me and death." And Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you say, I will do for you." Now, guys, there's a lot of things that we could kind of pull out of this passage and say, hey, this is why friendship is so important. But I want us to look at just two things in particular. Number one, we see from this passage, friendships are so important because they love you enough to tell you the hard truth. See, part of living in a broken world is that we don't see as well as we should. right? We don't see as well as we should. There are certain things in our lives that we're blind to, ideals that we're kind of enslaved to, and things that if someone else doesn't point out, they're going to totally shipwreck our lives. And then in this text, David has to look at Jonathan. He has to square up with Jonathan and say, hey, man, your dad isn't who you think he is. Your dad is into some messed up stuff. Your dad is trying to kill me. And Jonathan's response to him in verse 2 is, not my dad. What are you talking about? My dad would never do something like that. Right? He can't see clearly. David has to actually go to him again and say, man, your dad's into some bad stuff. He's trying to do some horrible things. He has to tell Jonathan the hard truth. And guys, this is why friendships are so important to us, because they can open our eyes to things that we would never see on our own. See, my best friend is a guy named Richard Daniel, and we went to college together. We played on the same football team together, and you know, we were roommates together. He was just one of the best friends I've ever had in my entire life. And this one day in college, Rich comes up to me and he says, "Man, Al, we got to talk, man, because I see some things in your life that aren't good. I see some things in your life that are going to strip you of joy, and that you need to actually repent of." And he just said, "Alex, man, I think you're really lazy." He just said, I've been looking at you, and you know, you've got a lot of influence on campus. People respect you, people look up to you, but you're not doing anything to advance the kingdom of God." Right? I don't know if you know me very well, but when someone tells me that I'm lazy or I'm not, you know, working hard, that's one of those things that is a trigger point. Right? And so Rich knows this about me, but he was willing to step in and say, "Listen, I see something in your life that is not going to work well for you." And now, guys, I have to be honest. My response to Rich in that moment was not, "Rich, thank you so much for telling me this. This is awesome. I'm going to grow. It's going to be amazing." Right? My response to Rich in that moment was, oh, bro, you see some things in my life? Okay, I see some things in your life too. I've actually got a list. Okay, number one, you smell bad. So Jesus wants you to take a shower. So fix that. Number two, your teeth are crooked. There's these things called braces. They're in the Bible. Look it up. I don't know. Take care of that. Okay, and so I just started kind of rattling off these things that I saw in his life too that were probably not true anyways. And I just got defensive. I thought, you know what? I'm going to lash back out at my friend. But I had to realize Rich loved me. Rich wanted what was good for me, and he wanted to actually speak into my life. And it took me a while to actually receive that. But I had to figure out, man, he actually cares for me, and he does see something in my life that I actually cannot see. And y'all, this is so important, because in the world that we live in, our friends are a gift from God. They help us to see what we can't. And as Christians, a lot of times our posture has to be one of, okay, you might be right about that. You might be right about that. I don't like that you're speaking that into my life. I don't like that you see that, but it could be true, because you know, I don't see as well as I should. And guys, so I have to ask kind of just two questions here, very quickly. Number one, do you have some hard truth that you are withholding from a friend? Right, do you have something that you see in someone's life and you're like, I could bring this up, but I don't want to bring any conflict into this. I don't want to mess this sort of friendship up. And I just want to press in a little bit to say, you know, if you see something in one of your friend's life and you don't speak in, and as a result of it, their marriage blows up, or their finances get ruined, or their kids kind of spin off the rails because they've got some messed up parenting stuff, your friends aren't going to thank you later. They're not going to thank you for being silent in those moments. And the second question that I just need to ask you guys is, are you willing to actually accept hard truths from your friends? Are you willing to say, you might be right about this. This could be something that I need to actually look at my life and repent of. And so, yeah, maybe that's true about me. So number one, friendships are important because they tell you hard truths. They tell us things that we often need to hear. But number two, the second reason why friendships are so, so, so important is because they give us a deep emotional connection. Okay, they give us this deep emotive bond. So right after David tells Jonathan that Saul is trying to kill him, and they come up with this plan to test, like, for sure, whether or not Saul is trying to kill David. And no surprise, right? Saul was. He is actually actively trying to kill David. And David and Jonathan meet kind of one last time in secret before David has to run away and become a fugitive. And this is what happens. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 20, starting in verse 41. It says this. Then as soon as the boy had gone, David rose from behind this stone heap, and he fell on his face to the ground, and he bowed three times. And they kissed one another, and they wept, with David weeping the most. Right? These guys are crying. They're in a really emotional state. And the question that I want to ask is, why is Jonathan so upset? Right? Why is Jonathan in this really bad place? Right? Because his life isn't in danger. Right? Saul is trying to kill David. Right? I get why David is crying, but why is Jonathan crying? What's happening here? See, this is why friendship is such an incredible gift from God. Is because true friends will create an emotional connection to you in order to be sensitive to you when you need it the most. True friends will create an emotional connection to you in order to be sensitive to you when you need it the most. See, there's this author named Nicole Hellman, and she says it like this. When you become a parent, you're only ever as happy as your unhappiest child. Right? When you become a parent, you're only ever as happy as your unhappiest child. And that's because for the rest of your life, you're connected to them. Emotionally, you've given them this bond that allows you to care for them, that propels you into action when they are in a really bad space. But what's so awesome and also scary about friendship is that in friendship, you give this emotional connection voluntarily, right? You care about this person that you're not related to, that you didn't birth, and what that's exactly what's happening to David and Jonathan right here. Because David's not okay, so Jonathan's not okay. There's been this bond that has formed so that Jonathan is committed to David's well-being, and he'll do whatever he can to help him in his time of need, right? Jonathan doesn't care that his dad is seeking to kill David. He wants to do whatever he can to help him, his friend, in his time of need. He's going to go against the wishes of his dad because his friend needs him. So in our lives, man, when our chips are down, when the storms of life hit us, when the brokenness of this world falls on us, when our worst fear is confirmed by that phone call that comes in at 3 a.m., when the diagnosis comes back that says it's cancer, when the person that you love the most breaks your heart and betrays you, it's our friends, our true friends, that at great cost to themselves will be there, will do whatever they can to weather the storm, to be there for you, because their well-being is tied to your well-being. If you're not okay, then they're not okay. Right? And they'll move heaven and earth to be in the room with you, to hold your hand when you cry, to make sure you do not come to ruin, and to get you through this storm. Now, guys, friendship for us, it's so insanely important in surviving a broken world because, number one, they love you enough to tell you the truth, and they offer you an emotional connection in your time of need. So, like, you know that you have a true friend when you share the same passion they do, when they'll tell you hard truth, and when they freely give you an emotional connection in a time when you need it the most. And now I could just kind of end there and say, okay, go and do likewise. Go be these type of friends. But if we're honest, you know, us in this room, we've been betrayed by friends, right? We've been stabbed in the back by friends. A lot of us have been let down and betrayed. And if we are honest, we are not the type of friends that we know we should be. Right? I mean, I know I'm not. I know I'm not always the person who wants to speak the truth in love. Sometimes I just don't want to step into conflict. Right? There are other times that I'm not emotionally connected there for my friends. That I just don't want to get messy. Right? There are a lot of times that I'm an absolutely terrible friend. But so the question I want to pose to you today is, where are we going to get the power to be the type of friends that we need to be so that our friends can have the type of friends that they need to have? Or where are we going to get the power to be the type of friends that we need to be so that we can have the type of friends that we need to have? And the answer to that question is this, that on the night that Jesus was betrayed, he did something for us, okay? John 15:15 says this, and this is Jesus talking. He says, I no longer call you slaves, but my friends. For a servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends, and I'm going to lay my life down for my friends. See, when Jesus said that, suddenly the entire history of the world can be seen in terms of friendship. Because Jesus saw his friends that were in trouble. Jesus saw his friends who could not do for themselves anything. They couldn't get themselves out of this storm of life. So Jesus said, you know what? I'm not going to stay up in heaven. I'm actually going to go down and I'm going to help my friends. I'm going to do whatever I have to do. It's going to cost me a great deal, but I'm going to be there for my friends. And what's so crazy about this story, what's so crazy about the story of David and Saul is the way David treats Saul is the way that Jesus actually treats us. The way that David treats Saul is the way that Jesus treats us. You see, David would not kill Saul, even though he had plenty of chances and opportunity to do so. See, Saul was an enemy that tried to kill him over and over and over again. He tried to harm him. He tried to betray him. But David would not raise a hand against Saul. He kept extending mercy and grace and offering up the opportunity to reconcile, to come together. And Saul rejected it. Saul would reject this offer of friendship from David. But today, in this place, God offers you that same thing. He offers you mercy. He offers you friendship. He's holding out his hand to say, listen, I know you've done some things in your life that you're not proud of. I know you've done some things kind of against me, but I don't want to judge you. I don't want you to come to the end of your life and be separated from me forever. I want to extend my hand in friendship. And it's possible for us to be friends with God because of what Jesus has done on the cross for us, right? Jesus lost his friendship with the Father temporarily so that we might have friendship with God forever. Jesus was rejected by the Father so that we might be welcomed in, that we might have friendship with God. See, it's Jesus who not only is the perfect friend and is the friend that we all desperately need, but he's the one who actually gives us the power to be the type of friends that we need to be, right? It's because of his sacrificial love for me that I can love my friends. It's forgiveness of me. It's his forgiveness of me that allows me to forgive and love my friends. It's Jesus speaking hard truth into me every time I open up the Bible and read how I fall short, that I'm able to speak into my friends. It's Jesus' offer of grace and forgiveness for me that allows me to give that to my friends. See, Jesus empowers us to be the type of friends that we need. Jesus is the perfect friend that we all desire. And he's the one who laid his life down for us so that we might be a people that are marked by friendship, that have friendship with one another, and a people who are after God's own heart.